Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Now, as well as being an English teacher and a podcaster, you might know that I'm also a stand-up comedian. Ha 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 ha, laughter. And stuff like that, you know, making people laugh. That's why my podcast is so funny. But no, I am a stand-up comedian. Most of you know that. But why am I saying this? Well, I've just uploaded a video of me doing stand-up comedy. It's a 28-minute video. It's a full performance of me doing stand-up comedy on stage in front of a live audience in London before COVID arrived, when all these things, when comedy shows were still possible. So it's a video. It's about 28 minutes long. It's me on stage in front of an audience of people at the Comedy Store in London doing my stand-up comedy thing. And if you'd like to see it, you can if you're a premium subscriber. That's right. I've uploaded it into the premium subscription. It's a special sort of bonus extra gift for the premium subscribers. You're welcome. There you go. All right. So check your Luke's English Podcast app, check the website, and you'll be able to watch it. You just need to obviously make sure you're signed in to the Luke's English Podcast app, that you're signed in to the website. Send me an email if you don't understand how it works. Otherwise, if you would like to sign up to Luke's English Podcast Premium to be able to see the full video and also get access to all of the other episodes, and there's over 100 episodes in there now, if you'd like to get all that stuff or you just want more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. How are you doing? I hope you're doing okay. In this episode, I'm talking again to Cara Leopold from leolistening.com. Cara has been on the podcast several times before, as you may remember, often speaking to me from inside one of her cupboards, where she goes in an attempt to improve the sound quality at her end of the recording. And if you are worried about Cara squeezing into such a tight space for these podcasts, she has assured me that her cupboard is reasonably comfortable, fairly spacious, and sufficiently ventilated, which is reassuring. Okay, so let me just explain to you sort of the reasons why we had this conversation and what we aimed to achieve in this episode. Okay, so Cara and I are both English teachers from the UK living in France. I'm originally from England. Cara is originally from Scotland. I live in central Paris, which is obviously a very urban place. It's the capital city of France. Cara lives in a city which is outside of France. It's a place called Besançon, which is in the east of France. Now, you'll see that the title of the episode is Urban Life versus Rural Life. Okay, I represent the urban side of things. Obviously, living in central Paris, it's an extremely urban place. Cara, although she lives in a city, that city is much more rural compared to Paris. It is a city, but there are more green spaces and it's much closer to proper countryside areas. So she's kind of representing the rural side of things. So on one hand, the aim was to just talk about differences between urban life and rural life, or more rural life. That's kind of one of the aims, is just to practice describing those things. And, you know, one reason for that is that in Cambridge exams like IELTS or FCE or CAE, these are things that always come up. You're often asked to talk about comparisons between urban and rural life, or descriptions of towns and cities and countryside places and things like that. And so that's one of the things. It's just useful from a language learning point of view to know how to talk about those things. But also, we had another sort of aim, and that was to clarify or at least talk about differences between the culture of life in Paris and the culture of life in other parts of France. And this relates to recent episodes I've done. I mean, I've often talked about life in France because obviously I live here. But recently I had an episode, a couple of episodes actually, one with Marie Connolly and one with Elspeth Gratty. And we talked about our lives in France and stuff, and there are a couple of moments where we started expressing some levels of frustration about certain attitudes. And there may have been moments when we said, you know, the French people are like this or France is like this. I mean, you may have heard me kind of complain about queuing in the supermarket or expressing frustrations about the way people behave on the metro, on public transport and stuff like that. You may have heard those sorts of bits of sort of minor low-level frustration or complaining. And so Cara and I wanted to kind of talk about this and talk about the fact that often when foreigners come to France, they will go to Paris and they'll experience the Parisian way of life. And then they will make comments about what France is like. But it's not really France, it's just Paris. And I've had a couple of comments from French lepsters who have kind of pointed that out, saying, you know, actually, I just feel like I need to say that this is, you know, this is Paris. Don't say that the whole country is the same as Paris. Paris is different. People are different there. And so that needs to be stated. So that's one of the things we're talking about. We kind of want to explore what the differences are between life in Paris and life in more provincial areas. That's like areas outside the capital city. So, for example, if we take my queuing issue that I have, that I always get frustrated because I feel like people don't queue up properly in the line, you know, at the supermarket and stuff, and it kind of makes me a bit sort of annoyed. So that's one of the things, like, is that a Parisian thing or is that something that happens in the rest of the country? So we're kind of comparing our personal experiences of culture shock in France, but also trying to get to the bottom of this whole question of which things are exclusively Parisian behavior and which things are true of the whole country. I'm not entirely sure that we fully answer that question, that we fully solve that problem. So again, French listeners, I do invite you to get into the comments section and you know, explain specific differences between the way people live in Paris and the way people live in other parts of the country. So I just wanted to say those things in order to kind of clarify our purposes for having this conversation. Broadly, you could relate this to the topic of culture shock or cultural differences. When we do come into contact with people from other cultures, we can have a range of experiences. It can be really fun and exciting to compare the way we do things with the way other people do things and to experience a different way of life. But also when you, for example, live in another country permanently, it can, after a while, get a little bit exhausting when you just feel different to everyone else and you don't know if you're doing things wrong, they're doing things wrong, if you're even wrong to be experiencing levels of frustration. You can feel guilty, and it's a very complicated experience. So broadly, those are the things we are talking about in this conversation. Okay, but just a couple of things for you to think about here. Where do you live? Do you live in a town? Do you live in the city? Do you live in the countryside? In your country, is there a difference between the way people act and behave in the capital city of your country compared to other parts of the country? Are those things distinctly different? And do you get a little bit annoyed sometimes when, like, let's say foreigners assume that the way of life in the capital city is the same as it is everywhere else? Okay. And also, have you had experiences of living in other cultures or experiences of coming face to face with other cultures and other ways of doing things? And how were those experiences for you? What were the positive things? But also, were there any things that you didn't understand? And how did that make you feel? All stuff that we are attempting to cover in this conversation. There may be moments when it seems that Cara and I get a little bit sidetracked by expressing our frustrations about certain things, and I will refer you again to the topic of queuing up, which seems to be a particular bugbear of mine. So I don't want you to think that we're just complaining about life in France. That's not the idea. We're just trying to work out what's Parisian and what's not. I should also say that Cara and I both love living in France. We both love our lives here, and we both love the country, and we've both chosen to live here, and we're very happy living here and living with our French partners and so on. So I just wanted to, you know, make that clear from the very beginning, okay? But anyway, let's now listen to the conversation with Cara. All right then, so here's my conversation with Cara Leopold from leolistening.com, and here we go. So, hello, Cara. How are you today?
Hi, Luke. I'm fine.
Good. Are you in your cupboard?
Yeah, I'm in a cupboard. Yeah, I was going to say that, then I was like, no, let's keep it secret. But yeah, I am in a cupboard.
Sitting in a cupboard in an attempt to improve the audio quality.
Yeah, anything for your listeners.
So how are you over there in the east of France?
In the east of France. Yeah, we're good. Lockdown round two, but everybody's outside, so it's not really quite the same vibe as in March, but people seem okay.
Yeah, so the government has introduced new measures. They came in sort of just early. When was it? It was the weekend.
5 minutes before they were supposed to come in, they told us, sort of thing. Was it last Wednesday? There was an announcement. And before, they used to like give announcements on a Wednesday or Thursday for the following Monday. But this time they were like, yeah, this is for Friday. And bear in mind, they told everybody to go on holiday as usual for the October holidays.
Yeah, that's right. So here in my family here, we had planned to go away on holiday for that weekend because it was the last weekend of the school holidays. Mm. So we were going to go on Friday morning with a couple of friends of ours, my wife, me, and our daughter. We were going to go rent a car, go up to the north coast, and spend like a nice long weekend there. And then Macron was like, no, lockdown. And we kind of considered whether we could find a loophole in the laws, because the lockdown restrictions are a little bit more complex this time. Mm. It's kind of like you can go out if X, Y, and Z, you know, but compared to last time where it was like, no, stay at home. This time it seems to be a bit more complicated. So we're wondering if we could find a way to swing it. But in the end, we decided no. And now we're currently trying to get our money back from Airbnb. We're trying to get the money back from the car rental company. I mean, it's not that bad. It's not that bad at all. I feel bad for the people who own little restaurants and shops and things. It must be really tough for them.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, it was my partner's birthday on Friday. So that was like the first day of the new lockdown. But, you know, he was 42, so it's not like it's a special birthday.
42 is good. That's the answer to life, the universe, and everything, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like if it had been his 40th birthday. Actually, one of my students told me that it's her partner's 40th birthday on the first day of the UK lockdown, which is coming on Thursday. So that, like, sucks a bit more, maybe.
Yeah, like, happy birthday, stay inside.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere or do anything. Yeah. So we filled out our certificates and went for a walk.
Yeah, that's one of the main difficulties. I mean, you know, for lucky people like us who are still able to, you know, do what we do, despite the lockdown restrictions, one of the sort of annoyances is that basically France has just sort of added more paperwork into your life again, as if there wasn't enough paperwork to do and admin to do. Every time you step outside, you have to complete an attestation, a sort of release form. What is it? Like a certificate, a form, a form.
Yeah, it's a form.
You have to fill in a form.
Yeah. To go out. You pick your reason for going out.
That's right. sometimes it feels like I'm not sure what the reason is. Like, I'm going out to go and pick up some vegetables from the supermarket, and I'm going to go and pick up my daughter on the way back, and we'll probably visit the park so that she can run around a little bit. So which ones do I tick? Do I
tick
buying
three?
Yeah. Buying essential food. Although it says in the form, it says buying essential provisions for your business. I'm like,
yeah, it's confusing.
It is confusing. Anyway, it's not too bad for us, thankfully. Indeed. But here we are talking again on my podcast. It's nice to know that you're basically all right, even though you are stuck in a cupboard for this one. Thank you. I'm sure my listeners will appreciate it. Do make sure that you're getting enough oxygen, though.
Well, the door is open this time, so it's an upgrade in a way.
Yes. So, well, let's see. This time we're talking, we do have a theme again this time, and we're going to try to talk about, well, I'm just going to ask you, so what were you thinking then when sort of, as we arranged this this podcast conversation?
Yeah, we were talking about the fact that, like, there have been some famous books, like there's plenty of famous people and famous books, like Paul, who you have on your podcast, and a guy like Stephen Clark, who writes books about like how the French people are annoying or whatever. And but they tend to skew very Parisian, right? It's normal, like people who are sort of journalists and authors, they're often based in Paris, and then they see French life through the Parisian lens. But obviously, like, you know, not everything that happens in Paris happens the same way, you know, outside of Paris, if you like.
Yes.
So we wanted to get onto kind of that. And it seems quite fitting because, you know, you live in Paris, but I live in what they call provincial France.
This is good. Okay. So because this relates to some things I said in a recent episode with a friend of mine called Elspeth. And Elspeth is from the UK too, and she lives in France, and we ended up, she lives in Paris to be specific, we ended up well, just outside Paris to be even more specific, but still we ended up talking about cultural differences and some things that we find frustrating, which always seems to be the thing that you know, non-French people or even non-Parisian people experience when they come to Paris. And as you said, there are books written on the subject, very successful books, like, for example, A Year in the Maud by Stephen Clark, and also Paul Taylor, his series of mini episodes that was on TV here in France, which was the, you know, it was kind of the British person's experience of living in France. It was called What the Fuck France, but arguably many of those things were sort of Parisian experiences. Mm. And so, yes, Elspeth and I were kind of talking about this stuff and talking about our experiences of even things like walking down the street or queuing at the supermarket and the difficulties we experience. And a lot of the time we were saying, this is what it's like in France, and French people do this, French people that. And I did get one or maybe two comments from French listeners. And I want to say a big hello to any French Lepsters listening. I often say that France is, like, you know, low down on the list, and it's the 15th country on the list. But I do want to make a special, give a special shout out to any French Lepsters. Bonjour, ça va?
Coucou.
Coucou, yeah. but anyway, I just wanted to say, yes, let's make this distinction then between what life is like in Paris and what life is like in the rest of the country. You're out in what they call the provinces, in the east of France, near the border with Switzerland there. What do you guys think? What do French people in that part of the country think of Paris, Parisians, and the way of life in Paris?
Good question. Well, I guess, yeah, that's an interesting question. Because, I mean, here, like, even here, there's even a division between, like, I mean, I'm in the biggest city in the region. I mean, it's not even particularly big. There's, like, 120,000, 115,000 people. So that's not especially big. Like, some of your listeners might live in much, much, much bigger cities. And for them, like, that size of city is sort of minuscule. But yeah, and even here, like, we've got, so there's, like, down here where you've got the city and there's lots of students and things like this, and then you've got the part of the region that's near the Swiss border, and that, it's really rural up there. So I think even there's a difference in mentality between like people there and people here, which sort of adding an extra layer to this sort of dilemma. But yeah, I mean, I guess maybe, I don't know. I can't say I've ever had the sort of conversation directly with people, like, what do you think of Parisians specifically? I guess it comes up like, cause like people have quite strong opinions often, like other French people will have opinions about people from other regions, like, oh, people from the South are like this. And then I'm sure there's like stereotypes of people from the East of France, which is where we are. Cause it's, you know, people might perceive us as being a bit more like Germanic or something like that in a way of thinking. But I guess, yeah, for Paris, people must perceive them as sort of, you know, like big city people, maybe snobby people, or, you know, pretentious in some way.
Yeah, I think that's probably it, that there's the sense that I get the really strong impression that even people who live in the suburbs of Paris, it's a different experience for them, that once you cross over the threshold of the Boulevard Périphérique, which is the kind of main highway that runs around Paris, that seems to be the border really between Paris and not Paris. Once you cross over that threshold and you're in proper Paris, it's a totally different sort of vibe.
It's a different vibe, because you imagine people like who they just go around everywhere on a scooter. Like, I'm not saying there's not scooters in provincial France, there obviously are, but like you're imagining like people going around on scooters and spending all their time like, I don't know, like left bank intellectuals like having coffees and talking about philosophy, or I don't know, like, well, then maybe that's like the sort of 1960s kind of idealized version of Paris or something. But yeah, you imagine that kind of thing. Actually, one thing I remember sort of friend here bringing up is like, given the prices of apartments in Paris, he was saying if somebody living in a small apartment in Paris were to sell up and move somewhere provincial, like where I live, they would live like a king. Like if you sold your flat, you could buy like a huge house with a swimming pool and a massive garden and all this. I know people, I think people have a hard time sometimes understanding that. Like, why would you live in a pokey flat in Paris when you'd have like a massive house in the provinces?
Yeah. I mean, it is a thing that many Parisians often struggle with, like that decision. Mm. And often the decision will be career based.
Yeah,
or possibly school based. So one of the reasons why you would choose to stay in Paris, even though you live in a very small flat, and my wife and I are, you know, hoping to buy a place soon, and we're looking, and the places that are in our price range are like, you know, definitely smaller than the place that we're renting at the moment.
Mm.
And it's not a great prospect of, you know, squeezing our entire lives into something that's, you know, two-thirds the size, 60% the size of what we're in now. But that is life in Paris. And so either it's because of proximity, you would choose to live in a crappy little small flat, well, not crappy, but small. You choose to live in a small flat in Paris because it's close to where the work is.
Yeah.
And if you work in a certain, you know, occupation, being in Paris is really important because that's where you actually get all the work. And secondly, schools, like there are lots of schools and universities in Paris, and if you want your children to go to those schools, then you're going to need to live quite close to them. I think those are the main reasons, but also there are other attractive things that keep people in Paris.
For sure. Like, I was just thinking as well, like it's pretty common to meet people here who are like, you know, I'm paying however many hundreds of euros a month for a studio apartment for my kids so they can like go to university in Paris because the school they want to go to, like, or the option that they chose, like it's only in Paris, like we don't have a choice. And people will put down a lot of money. I remember like one of my friends, after I did my master's degree, like he moved to Paris again for work, and he was like sleeping on the floor of his cousin's apartment, like initially, you know, just to think maybe when he was doing his internship or something, just because like you've not got enough money to have your own place. So there's some pretty difficult, complicated living arrangements. And I heard as well that a lot of people, they don't want to rent apartments in Paris because, so it seems that it's hard to rent if you're a renter, and it's hard to rent out if you're a letter, because people, like, I don't know, will maybe fake their salary and pretend they earn more than they do in order to get an apartment, or, you know, it just seems like a really complicated system So they're probably like empty apartments because people don't even want to, like, you know, or they'd rather Airbnb them or something.
Yes, it can be very complicated because of the law. So so you've got landlords. This is a bit of vocab for the listeners, just in case they don't know. Landlord. The landlord is the word for the person who owns the property, and a tenant is the person who lives there and pays rent to the landlord, right? So the law here in Paris, I don't know if this is for the whole country, but certainly in Paris, is that the law does support the rights of the tenant a lot more. Yeah. And so it can, if you're a landlord, you've got to be very careful about the people that you sign a contract with. You've got to be very careful about the tenants that you choose, because you don't want to be in a situation where your tenant can't pay you your the monthly rent, but the tenant has the right to continue living in the property. Because obviously for a landlord, that's kind of a nightmare. You're not getting any money. And you've got someone living in the property, and you know you don't have the right to expel them. I mean, you know, on one hand, this is good because it means that people don't get turfed out into the street.
Yeah, they're not homeless. Yeah,
they're not homeless, which is obviously very good. But it can be difficult for landlords, and as a result, it means that there's a very strict selection process for tenants. It can be very difficult to get a decent apartment, because if you don't have the right profile as a tenant, then, you know, landlords won't want to let their apartment to you. Yeah, it's I mean, life seems to be so complicated here sometimes. There's so many kind of complications. I'm sure it's complicated everywhere, but it seems so obvious here.
It seems extra complicated in Paris. Like, I don't think I had to go, I haven't rented an apartment for a while. I mean, obviously you do have to provide various things and there are various checks and stuff, but I mean, I don't think it's as hardcore here.
One of the reasons is just the demand, you know, the level of demand that obviously, because as I said before, often it's work related, you know, career related. So many people want to move to Paris and live in Paris. And as a result, it's sort of a landlord's market, in the sense that they can charge more and more money. And there's a lot of competition between tenants. So you can't just sort of stroll into town and expect to get a fairly decent place to live immediately. It can take you quite a long time before you find a good apartment, because there's so many other tenants out there. And so you're competing with them. So that can be difficult. I mean, Paris, I mean, going back to just basic comparisons between living in Paris and living outside the city. I mean, I was talking about why people would come here. And, you know, I mentioned work and schools and universities and things. Also, there's just obviously the excitement and the sort of vibrant cultural life here. There are so many art galleries and exhibitions and theatres and concerts and great restaurants. And there's just like obviously Paris is famous for its culture. And so that is a very exciting thing. And people, I think, who have always lived in Paris, who were born here and who've grown up here, for them, it's almost like unfeasible to live anywhere else, that they couldn't imagine living outside, because they feel like they're just in the middle of nowhere. And there's, I mean, you know, it's a bit like, imagine this. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. If you've ever lived in a city and, you know, you're there all the time and, you know, you go to sleep with the sound of the city outside your windows, the sounds of cars and people and noise. And then you go to the countryside, maybe on holiday or to visit your parents or something, and you go to bed and you lie in your bedroom and it's so silent that you can't sleep. It's kind of like, it's so, the silence is deafening. It's like, you know, really, really loud silence. And I think for a lot of Parisians, they kind of experience this. On one hand, it's kind of nice and calm to get out of the city. But on the other hand, some Parisians, like my wife, for example, who was born here, going out of the city can be sort of a bit almost traumatic, to just be in a place where there's no noise and nothing seems to be happening. And it's just like, they can't handle it.
Wow.
But on the other hand, life in Paris is expensive and it's stressful. People are stressed in this city.
Yeah, you get that impression, yeah, that it's sort of bustling. Well, actually, and when I've talked to people from provincial France who've moved to Paris, I've heard them complain about, like, you know, just it takes ages to get anywhere. Like, like life is, you're very dependent on public transport because not so many people have cars, and things are far apart. I mean, it's a big city. I mean, here in Besançon, you can very easily walk the whole length of the city. I mean, you know, it's very easy to get around. It's not very big. Whereas in Paris, very often, you know, you might be living on one side of Paris, but your work might be on the other. I mean, you know, you can't always live close to your work, and then you're dependent on public transport. The vagaries of that looks stressful in Paris. So, like, you've got all this cool stuff going on, but, like, you know, you have to get there. It might not necessarily be, like, just next door kind of thing.
The prospect of even a 30-minute journey on the metro, especially if you're accompanied by a small child, is kind of, sometimes it's just like, I can't do it, especially these days. One thing I'm curious to find out is about just your experiences of living in Besançon, and maybe some of the things that you find to be frustrating. I don't want to dwell on the negatives too much, but I'm saying this because I've had guests on this podcast before, like, for example, my conversation with Elspeth recently, where we end up sort of talking about frustrating experiences that we've had in Paris. And, you know, you mentioned Paul's TV show. A lot of that is about Paul being angry about French culture. And Stephen Clarke's books, which are about a guy struggling, an English guy struggling in Paris. What things do you find to be sort of tricky in Besançon? Are there things like, for example, queuing? Do you ever have trouble queuing up at the supermarket?
I think it's probably not as bad as it must be in Paris. But it's true that, like, the queue is a bit of a tricky concept, I think, in France in general. So, like, I remember one time I was doing a class at the Centre de Linguistique Appliquée. So that's a big language school we have here in Besançon, mostly for, like, the French language, but also they teach other languages, including English. And I was doing, like, an intensive thing. Sometimes they have these summer school things where they do, like, 2-week intensives. And so I had asked the students to do, like, a presentation on the topic of their choice, just to help me fill up 25 hours of the week that we had. And so one of them, like, she'd lived in Quebec. I think it was in, well, she'd lived in Canada in any case. And so she gave a presentation about, like, you know, Canadian culture and the things that she noticed. And, like, one of the slides with people at a bus stop queuing up. And so she was like, oh my God, look at this slide. Like, the people are queuing for the bus. And it's true that, like, in France, people are sort of a bit scattered at the bus stop, and there's not always an acknowledgement of, like, who was there first. And I don't know if have you ever been to Japan?
Oh, yes. I lived there for 2 years.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, shows you how much I know. So, like, when you go to Japan and you want to get on the train, this is really beautiful. Like, people will queue by the door. So what they won't do is, like, what would happen in France is, so the train stops or the bus stops or whatever, and people are getting off, and people will start getting on at the same time.
Mm.
No. Like, in a civilized society, like in Japan, you actually, like, you let everybody who needs to get off, and then you start getting on. So there's none of this jostling, you know.
Yeah. So that happens to you then outside Paris, that people, for example, will push onto public transport before everyone else has got off.
Yeah, definitely. Even though, like I was saying, like, in the east of France, we've got maybe a bit more of a reputation, maybe even more in Alsace than here, but, like, a reputation for sort of being a bit more disciplined, a bit more Germanic, a bit more, you know.
Yeah.
So we're probably not the worst region, but it's still, like, a difficult concept for people.
Yeah.
And when you come from Britain, it's quite annoying to see. And I do spend a lot of time here muttering stuff under my breath. And it's a bit easier now with a mask. I can vocalize insults and nobody knows. Like,
what are you muttering under your breath, can I ask?
I think I have a bit of an anger problem or something, because I do, like, mutter a lot to myself. It just out and about, I don't know, just people annoying me, I don't know, in the supermarket, queuing. Walking down the street is actually the worst one. Let me just talk about that for a second. So, like, I have a friend, she's Irish. I guess she's, like, she's a lot older than me. I mean, she could be my mother, but, like, if you saw her in the street from behind, you would think, like, she was younger than me because, like, she dresses really young and she looks really cool. And she lived in Paris for a long time. So she moved from Ireland when she was maybe 30. And she lived in Paris for years and years. I don't know, 20 years, 25 years. And then she moved here because she wanted to focus on her painting because she's an artist. And she thought that, like, here she'd be, like, living in the countryside and it would be better for her painting. And she knew Besançon because she used to come and teach here at the same school that I mentioned earlier, the Centre de Linguistique Appliquée, and doing the summer schools and stuff like this. So, like, she moved here and it turned out to be a big mistake because she really doesn't like provincial living, or, well, living in Besançon in any case. And one of the things, like, that she always comments on when we're walking down the street together is the fact that, like, people, they sort of feel like they're the only ones on the pavement, or, like, they're the only people who exist. So, like, people, like, maybe won't make an effort to get out of the way. But then the way she says it, it's as if that never happened in Paris. And I'm just like, Eve, you've got terrible, like, confirmation bias. Every time somebody in Besançon does a bad thing, it just reconfirms all the things you hate about here. But I'm like, surely in Paris, some people are not considerate on the pavement.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I there was me thinking that that was just a Parisian thing. And then if I say French, it's, for example, like, French people walk down the street differently to English people, that I was being, like,
an awful xenophobe.
I thought that I was being unfair and that was just Paris, but apparently it happens in other areas too. That is very interesting. And you mentioned the idea of confirmation bias. Maybe you're right. Maybe whenever we see any sort of behavior that we consider to be negative, it just confirms some kind of inherent bias against France or something. But I mean, I really hope that I'm not just being really prejudiced against France, and that the things I've noticed are actually real, because that is a culture shock experience, that you go to another country and you see people doing things differently. And on one hand, you can just get very frustrated with how everyone else seems to be getting it wrong. For example, why don't they walk down the street in a more considerate way? Why don't they make space for people on the street? And why do people walk down the pavement as if they own the whole pavement?
Mm.
And so you kind of feel, like, frustrated with everyone else. But on the other hand, you sometimes think, no, maybe it's me. It's me. I'm just getting frustrated on my own here. So it's obviously me that's wrong. And sometimes it can kind of make you feel very paranoid, and you feel like your frustration is unfair and stuff, you know, you feel like you're wrong in your frustration. It's a very complicated experience. But the fact is, people do things differently in different places. It's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I think, yeah, it's because you're always comparing with, like, what you know from home, I guess, is going to be most people's, like, baseline. And I suppose it can go, like, if you're French and you're not used to queuing, or, you know, I was going to say considerate behavior, that's not fair. Because it's not like French people are not nice, and, you know, people in Besançon are very nice and friendly, and they have, you know, they've got their good qualities. It's not like, you know, I find that people are just very curious about why you're living here. And especially, well, I think that's all the more so in provincial France, especially somewhere smaller. People are really curious. They're like, what the hell are you doing here? Like, how did you end up here? And maybe in Paris, they're just like, oh, another Anglophone, who cares? Like,
now, what they do, in my experience in Paris, is they hear an English person speaking, or they hear me speaking English. Like, for example, I'm trying to persuade my daughter to not to run away because I'm queuing up for the toilet in the park, and I'm like, "Don't run over there! You know, you just stay here while I, you know." And I'm in a very stressful situation, and then some guy in the queue is like, "Oh, you speak English?" And then suddenly they start speaking English to me, and I'm like, "Mate, now is not the time." You know, and then I'm a rude foreigner because I don't want to chat to him about his, you know, the
whatever. So, yeah.
But
I went to London once.
Exactly. Or just like, I thank you for speaking English to me. That's nice that you're doing that. But you know, look what I'm dealing with here. Okay, just can you speak English sort of just in your head for a while,
yeah,
and then leave me alone?
I think that's worse when you live here, because like sometimes they might assume that you're a tourist or something.
Yeah.
I even get that here. Maybe not so much now that I speak French better, but sometimes I'm like, why would I be a tourist in Besançon? No, I mean, there are tourists in Besançon, but I mean, maybe not so many as in Paris. And well, I'm surprised at that in Paris, because I'm like, well, surely there must be so many English speakers around. Like, it's more exciting here, like when you hear someone speaking English, because it is a bit more unusual. And I remember actually the first year I was teaching, like I was teaching in the uni here, and I had no idea what I was doing really, because I hadn't taught before, and I ended up teaching and stuff. And one of my colleagues was like, sort of, given that a lot of our students are from sort of, they were often like the first in the family to go to university, and they were maybe from somewhere quite rural in the region, and this was their first time in the city. Like, he was like, they've never like seen an English speaker before, really.
Yep.
So like, it's actually like really motivating for them. And one of my students even told me that, like, it is so motivating for me to be able to speak to you, because you're actually an English speaker, and like, it shows me that I can, you know, I can actually do it. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of cool. Like, I wouldn't, you know, that made me feel a bit better about what I was doing.
Yeah.
Made me feel special.
Yeah. I mean, where you have to, it's a sort of a double-edged sword, or is that's maybe not the right thing. It's a, there's good and bad things about, you know, being a, certainly for us as native English speakers living abroad, is that on one hand, you get this kind of, you suddenly have all this value to people, that you are the purveyor of English, and you're suddenly an opportunity, a great opportunity for them to practice their English. But on the other hand, sometimes you think, can someone just talk to me for me, not for my English?
Yeah.
Can you not love me for who I am?
Yeah. Why don't they love me for me? Yeah, that's really worrying, especially like romantic relationships. Like, are they just using me for my English? That's actually never happened to me. But
I would... I've been
always be a bit paranoid about it.
I've been there many times. I mean, I've been teaching for 20 years now, but there were certainly years in my 20s when I was teaching, and you know, you end up sort of romantically involved with people, not necessarily my students. I'm a professional, but certainly kind of living abroad, you end up in relationships with people who aren't native English speakers, and yeah, sometimes you realize, oh, I see, you're just with me just because it's a chance to practice your English, you realize, and then you think, oh great, this isn't very nice, is it really?
Like,
so that does happen
used,
quite a lot.
Like,
yeah, you know. I mean, it's weird, like some guys, I mean, I'm sort of referring to like Japan here a little bit, that there are definitely guys, and it's usually guys who you realize that the part of the reason they're there is because girls will want to go out with them because it's exciting for them to be with a foreign person, and it's also for the girls, it's also a great chance to practice their English, and the guys are fine with it. They're like, this is fine because I get to have sex and these girls get to learn English. And you just think, oh god, no thanks.
God, that is actually, we've got a friend who's a bit like that, who's been living in Korea and China, and yeah, as a European man, you've got that apparently like exotic factor, or I don't know, like, anyway, well, whatever, like,
yeah,
hey, if they're happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if they're happy, that's fine. If everyone's happy, great. It's not my cup of tea. I mean, you know, I'm willing to drink some of that tea, but it's not necessarily the tea I want to have all the time. You know what I mean? Oh God, how did we end up here?
Yeah, on this topic. Yeah, no, I've only been chatted up abroad, like, for my looks and personality, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
not from English.
Again, it's not a major problem. It's kind of a good problem to have, you know, that people want to talk to you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I've been to like enough parties in Paris where I just, you know, you just kind of think, when are people going to realize that I'm an English speaker? And then you get cornered by some guy who, in his head, you know, he's thinking, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to practice my English. And then they're just talking at you, And yeah. They're just like talking at you, and it's not a proper conversation. It's not like a chance to have a proper, meaningful connection with someone. Instead, they're just like going on to you about the English that they learnt at school and yada yada. And just like, I've heard it all before, mate. Like, yeah. You don't care about me. You're just practicing your English. All right, fine. Okay. Can I have another beer, please?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, the upside of it in some, because I used to get really tired of like having to explain where I was from and why I was here. Like, as if, like, who are you? Are you like the police aux frontières? Like, are you trying to like check my status or whatever? I used to really like annoy me. I used to get a bit, about it. But I've sort of realized since then, I was like, I don't like making small talk, for instance. Like, I find it quite hard. And actually, like, being from somewhere else is like a really good conversation starter. And it like, because then people are usually naturally curious and they'll have questions, like, unless they do the annoying thing of wanting to speak to you in English, which I don't necessarily mind. It depends. But yeah, usually like, so for me, it's kind of good. I'm kind of like trying to like embrace it because I figure, yeah, it's a good small talk topic and a good icebreaker in a way. Yeah. Did you know I'm English? Well, we're British. Well, I'm actually Scottish. Well, I'm going to have to explain all that in the conversation that will follow, because you'll probably have questions. Actually, being Scottish is good because people want to tell you about their holidays in Scotland. And like, I met some guy at yoga and he's like, oh, I love Scotland. I've been to Harris and Lewis and like all these Scottish islands. And I'm like, I've never been there, mate. Like, you know more about Scotland than me at this point. Like,
it must be a little different being from Scotland, because when people find out I'm English, then, you know, I don't know, there are certain things about English culture that I'm not that proud of. I don't know, it's all very complicated, the whole England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, Britain, UK, what's the difference? No one knows. And I don't know, it's all a little bit fraught, but it must be nice when people, I don't know. Do you think it's easier to talk about being from Scotland than it is to talk about being from England? This is a matter of opinion, isn't it?
I guess it is. I'm just like, people are more likely to have gone on their holidays to Scotland, because there's been a lot of like, I don't know why, I get the impression in recent years there's been a lot of like programs on French TV, like documentary programs or travel programs, like about Scotland, and like everybody wants to go there now.
Well, it's a beautiful place.
Hmm.
It is. And I don't know. I think maybe England, like English tourist resorts, like, for example, the Lake District, are incredibly crowded these days. And there's places like Cornwall, Devon and Dorset. They're also super crowded. Like, you know, just a town like St. Ives on the Cornish coast is a beautiful place with a great beach. But you cannot find a parking space there. It's extremely difficult to get there. Whereas I don't know, I feel like Scotland maybe has got more wilderness areas in it, and so it's more open to be.
Yeah, definitely pretty empty, some parts of it.
Bit more space and less crowded, less full of people. So it's probably a great resource in terms of the Scottish tourist industry, that they probably have been doing a great job of advertising it to French tourists and stuff like that, because it's like, we've got all this space. Look at these beautiful mountains and valleys and things. But anyway, I don't want to sort of grumble about the experience of being a British person living abroad, because obviously we have chosen to be here, and despite the things that can be frustrating, overall we love it and stuff like that. Tell me about your French. You've been living in France since you were what, 22? You have told us about this before, but just maybe recap. Did you speak any French when you moved here?
Yeah, I did, because I studied it at university, and I had kind of decided after I finished my studies that I wanted to come to France and really, like, you know, continue improving my French and also live here, because I thought it would be cool to live here. Because I had spent some time in France, like during my summers at uni, and I was like, okay, this could be really cool to come and like see. That's interesting, because like that was like shorter periods of time, and I was very enamored with France, and I was really excited about like coming and living here and kind of speaking French every day. I just thought that was so cool. I think that's what often happens on a sort of shorter trip. You don't see the downsides, right? You only see like positive things. And I really didn't want to live in the UK anymore. So I suppose it's like, you're just excited to be somewhere different and you're fed up with your life at home. So you're like, you're really focused on the positive things. So we talked about like negative confirmation bias before, but I think there's periods where it was very positive for me. But apparently I think that is what happens often when people like move abroad, like they have the honeymoon period and then like the reality sets in. Then there's a tough period and then you come out on the other side, like a bit more realistic, you know, about your expectations and about what the country is really like. So that meant actually though that I did speak French already, so like I think I could pretty much like say what I wanted to say, just it wasn't very like idiomatic, maybe a bit like bookish or whatever because I had studied it at university. So yeah, I wanted to just learn to sound like a normal French person, if you like. Well, now I sound like someone from here because I use expressions that they only use here. And I've had people say to me before, oh, you sound like you got a bit of the accent from here or just like, oh, really? Like this. Yeah. People who are not from here. And I was like, really?
So wait, when you speak to locals, then do they, what's their instant reaction? Do they often go, oh, you have an accent? Do you have a bit of an accent? Because that's what often happens when you speak.
Yeah, I think they usually work it out.
Is it the first thing though? Because often for me, it's just blatantly obvious from the very moment, even with the very moment I walk into the shop sometimes, I just feel like I don't know what kind of English vibes I'm giving off, but I probably just, you know, I mean, I'm not Emily in Paris on Netflix. Okay. I do say bonjour or bonsoir when I go into places, you know, I know the basics. I think I must be giving off some like really English vibes. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's the Beatles t-shirt I'm wearing or something. I don't know.
maybe it's the fact you're wearing a bowler hat, an umbrella.
Waving an English flag. And I've got
a Union Jack t-shirt and you've got a bulldog on a leash, a British bulldog.
An English, English football shirt on or something. No. But I don't know. Often like the first thing that people notice is like, oh, you're English. Like even the other day, right, I was at the cash point at the bank to get some money out because I was buying a used jacket for my daughter. You know, like we'd got this thing on Facebook Marketplace or whatever it is. And so I walked down the road to an apartment just sort of, you know, just at the end of the road and to buy this coat. And then I realized I needed money. So I had to go over the road to get the money out. And as I was getting my cash out, of course, there are a couple of like homeless guys sitting next to the cash point because this is Paris. It's very common that you find where a place where you get money out, there'll be a couple of homeless guys posted there, sitting there, like whatever, drinking their beer or whatever. And one of them started talking to me and we had a little exchange. And, you know, just within the first, after I'd said my first thing, which I don't know what it was that we said, I think he said, oh, it's this machine's not working. And I was like, oh, merci, you know. And he said, oh, are you English?
Right.
And I was like, yeah. And then he was kind, you know, he said to me, oh, but you know, your French is very good. And I was like, yeah, that's not really true, but thanks anyway. I mean, you know, just like anyone I come across, it's normally that. I mean, you know, I suppose for them it's interesting that to meet someone who's not French and when they notice it, it's the first thing they say. I think it's also true for anyone living in the UK as well. I've heard this as well, that, you know, friends of mine living in London who were not English, people would be like, oh, where are you from? Which is always an annoying question, I think.
It is an annoying question.
Oh, where are you from? You know, but where are you from originally? And things like that. But so does that happen to you then when you chat to people, is this something that they feel compelled to say?
Does quite often happen. You know what actually I find stranger is when somebody never brings it up.
Oh,
I'm kind of like, are they just so blasé? Do they just not give a shit that I'm not French? Do they just like, they're just like, I see people from all over all the time. I don't care.
But wait, okay. So for me, it's like a little bit annoying when they feel that they have to mention that they know
I'm not
French.
It annoys me too.
But for you, you're like, no, I want you to acknowledge my uniqueness, please.
Well, sometimes I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of like, okay, that's odd that they didn't bring it up, because some people can be quite annoying with it. Like once they know you, they sort of make jokes about it or something, or they ask you about Brexit.
Oh God,
Yeah, that's really exhausting.
Brexit, yeah. Yeah, normally I have to get in there first with Brexit and say, oh, yeah, it's terrible. You know, don't ask me. Just don't get me started. And
yeah, don't
like
get me started. Well, there's not much to say, is there, really? But, like, I'm trying to think, because, like, well, this year's been a bit weird. I haven't really met anyone new, I would say, this year. I'm trying to think if people brought it up earlier in the year. I went to, like, a workshop to learn how to make tawashi sponges. It's like a thing where you like weave old socks to make sponges. I know that sounds insane, but like I like doing things like that. That was like a one-off where somebody could have brought it up. I'm not sure if they did, but we were mostly like weaving sponges.
Because they're too busy weaving sponges
to like notice that I'm it probably did get brought up. And then I went to another workshop to learn how to like, it was about like herbal medicine and like, could it have been? I have no idea. I don't remember now, because this was like in the beginning of the year, and then since then I haven't really had so many opportunities to talk to new people.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, I'll repeat myself. I don't want the listeners to feel that we're just complaining about.
It does sound like we're really moaning a lot about like.
Yeah.
But yeah. Just think twice the next time you meet an Anglophone. In the street,
frankly. I don't know. I think it's just a lot of these things, okay? A lot of the stuff that people find frustrating when they live in another country, a lot of it is just basic human nature. And it's stuff that people, it's not really, it's, you know, it's just people being people. Like, of course, if you are from a town, if I was living in some town outside Norwich or something, right? If I was living in Cromer or something and I met a person who if I was working in a shop and I met someone and they were talking to me for a bit and they had a different accent from another country, I would probably say, oh, where are you from? You know, I'd want to know because I'd find it interesting and unusual. So I don't know. I think we can't really blame these things. It's just for us, it's something that happens every single time. And so
it's repeated again and again. But just wait until somebody doesn't bring it up, then you'll be even more like, oh, it just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I want to tell my story about being English again. And you get disappointed when they don't ask. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? We can never be satisfied humans.
Yeah, we're just difficult. You may as well just ask anyway. It's fine. We actually secretly love talking about it.
I guess so. I don't know. It's like,
No, but it's a good, like I say, it's a good party piece. It's a good icebreaker, conversation opener. Like I say, for me, I don't really like making small talk. I actually find, actually, that's something else about the French. I find that it's hard. Now, maybe this is different in provincial France. So I find that here, everything is very, very family oriented. Mm-hmm. To the extent that like, I remember someone saying to me once, you know, j'habite en colocation. So in French, that's like, I live in a flat share or a house share.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, who do you live with? Yeah, but it's like, it's with my cousin or my cousins. And I'm like, look, right? In the UK, random strangers who don't like each other have to share flats and houses, all right? They're not cousins. They are random people off the street, right? And here it's like, oh, yeah, but my uncle is the landlord kind of thing. Like, it's... Yeah. That's really different. I mean, I come from a big family and I have a lot of cousins. So, I mean, it could be possible that I could end up living with one of my cousins or something, or it could have been possible if we had lived in the same city or something. But like that would be unusual in the UK, whereas in here it's like perfectly normal. And I find that makes it hard to make friends because people hang out with their family.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. I mean, one thing that people maybe don't realize is that, yeah, in the UK, a very normal way of doing things is that you will do your A-levels, you know, when you're about 17 or 18. And then if you get into university, you will just leave home, move to a completely different city, different part of the country. And you will just suddenly end up living with a bunch of other students who you've never met before. And you spend, you know, 3 or 4 years just living with other people. And it's I don't know if like other, if people are doing that in other countries. In France, I find that, yeah, when people do go to university, they'll often go to university in the town where they live. So they'll be like, a lot of the students that I used to teach at university here, they were living at home and going to university every day and then just going home at the end of the day, which was kind of odd for me. Like, at the student experience in the UK is that you go to your university classes, and then when you go home, you're going home to either a student, a completely mad, insane student residence where everyone's completely drunk all the time, and there's
like
just
Animal House. Yeah,
it's like, yeah, Animal House, the movie, and these kind of crazy parties and stuff, because you know, everyone's living away from their parents. Or they go and live in some shared house, which is a similar situation. And so the kind of English university experience, or maybe the British university experience, is quite crazy in terms of the lifestyle, that you're balancing your studies with trying not to party too much. But I don't think it's like that everywhere else.
Well, if we take my boyfriend as an example. So like, well, I think in France, like, most people go to the university of their region, right? You can apply outside your region, but it's like, I think it's just simpler to stay in your region. But that could mean that you are moving, because I mean, France is big, right? And the regions are big, and you know, here we're quite rural, you know, so you might end up having to move to Besançon, and you could be 1 hour, 2 hours from where you came from originally. But yeah, like, he lived with his parents all through university. And then he wouldn't have left home until he was maybe 24. And even the first year he was working, he was living like with his parents. And they don't even get on that well. Like, it's just like the French way. And then he moved because he had to move for his job. So he spent 3 years in a different town, not actually too far from Paris. And then he lived there, and then he moved back here. And when he moved back, he moved into his own apartment, because he wasn't going to like move back in with his parents at like age 30 or something. But that's pretty common. And I hear that from friends. Like, it seems to be common in a lot of continental Europe. I mean, I can't comment on every country, but you often hear like people are 25 and they still live at home, and they're even still doing their studies. Like in the UK, you're usually done by like when you're 21, 22, and you know, in other countries, it seems to go on like forever, and you know, you're living at home for seemingly forever.
There is that, you know, that film character Tanguy in France.
Yeah,
he's a character in a French film. I can't remember the name of the film, but basically, it's kind of something that everyone knows. It's like a cultural reference point that everyone knows in France. That it's a comedy about. Basically, the film starts. I haven't even seen the film. It's just my wife has told me all about it. The film starts with a mother and her child. The child is newborn, and she's like, you know, in this love bubble with her baby, and the mum and dad are just totally in love with their baby, and the mother whispers to the baby, you know, I'm, you know. What is it? You know, you're always going to be with me forever and ever. I'm always going to love you, and you're always going to be with us forever, which is the sort of thing that, you know, new parents say to their babies. And then cut to like the future, maybe 20, 25 years into the future, and the child has become a grown adult. And the parents are so fed up because he will never leave home. He just, they can't get rid of him. And, I think it's a funny film, basically about that situation of how, just like, the kids these days, they just like never leave home, and after a while, it's just like a real burden for the parents to have these kids constantly. They're like, just fuck off.
Leave us alone, let us live our lives already.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Isn't the movie just, I've never seen it, but I've heard the reference explained to me because it's important to know. Isn't it just called Tongi, like the film?
Maybe it is Tongi, yeah. Which Tongi is one of those names, by the way, that I always found kind of funny.
Oh, it's such a French name.
It's such a French name. It's a nice name, but it's not a name that we have in England. And when I was, you know, teaching at university, I had 10 classes of about 25 students in each class. So that's like 250 students each year. So that's a lot of quite typical French names. And Tongi was one of those names that would come up in my registers quite a lot. And I spent quite a lot of time going through the names, the list of names in the registers, you know, doing their marking and stuff. And so Tongi for me in my head was Tan Guy.
Because it is, like, literally.
It's spelled T-A-N-G-U-Y, Tan Guy. And I could never get over that, but it's basically your name is written Tan Guy. And but they were never really that tanned. Anyway, it was just a weird window into my brain there, my Tan Guy. But no, Tongi, yeah, is it. Oh, Cara. Mm. We should probably wrap this up in some way.
I know, we could go on for days, but I think that would be very boring for...
It would be very self-indulgent and boring for us to just keep banging on like this. But I feel like we should probably conclude in some way. I've got an idea, right? Mm. So we've been talking about cultural differences. We've been sharing our personal experiences of living in Paris, in my case, and in a more provincial area of France, in your case. And we've also been talking about living away from our home country and living in another country and the sort of the experiences that we have there, both good and frustrating. One thing I reckon is a good way to wrap this up is that when you do live abroad or when you do live in another culture and you notice differences which you find strange or difficult to understand or maybe frustrating, it's always worth remembering that it's not weird, it's just different. And that comes from a TED Talk, which is quite good. I can't remember the TED Talk is called Weird or Just Different. And it's basically all about that basically people live in different ways. There are probably reasons, like perfectly decent reasons why people live differently. And there'll be, you know, historical, psychological, cultural, maybe geographical reasons that cause people to behave in different ways. And we just have to sort of be a bit zen about it and just kind of accept it. And always remember, it's not weird. It's not strange. It's not wrong. It's just different. And that's that.
Wow, that's a great way to look at it. No, I think once you get over the initial shock of some things and you know what to expect, like, and you just kind of roll with it, then you'll be fine because you're like, oh, this is just how they do things. And there's no point in getting frustrated or upset about it. Like,
yeah, you can't like change. It's hard for you to change yourself. First of all, if you get wrapped up in that, I'm doing it all wrong, then you've got to just think, it's all right. It's just different. You can't necessarily beat yourself up about, you know, whether you are right or wrong in that context. And also, similarly, you can't expect to somehow change the customs and habits of an entire nation of people. You know, it's like there's no point really getting frustrated about it. Like I do get frustrated when I see the way that people behave on the metro and you know, coming from my experience of living in Japan, where people get out of each other's way and they make an effort not to use up too much space. People are very considerate and stuff like that. And then I come to Paris, where people were bumping into each other, and as you say, they don't seem to be fully aware that there's lots of other people around them and that sort of thing. And I do get frustrated by that. I do kind of think, oh, I wish that they would let people off the train before they get on. But then it's really bad for me. It's just bad for my blood pressure. It's just bad for my state of mind. And the best way is just to be like, it's okay. It's just a different way of doing things.
I recommend muttering things under your breath, either in French or English, preferably in English with obscure swear words.
I do mutter things under my breath, actually, quite a lot. In fact, not just under my breath. Sometimes I'm actually, I'll walk down the street swearing quite loudly occasionally. When I'm driving in Paris, that is the worst. And like just driving through the streets of Paris, it's so difficult, especially when you're trying to find a parking space. And in those moments, I will swear quite loudly within the confines of the car. I'm not rolling the window down and like shouting at people directly. I'll just generally sort of let off steam by swearing. I think swearing is actually a very healthy thing to do. Actually, yeah. if you don't do it at someone, if you're just doing it, it's actually a good way of releasing tension. But anyway, it's not weird. It's not wrong. It's just different. Everything's just okay. Different. Yeah.
I feel zen after all that.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope that the listeners, maybe people can relate. I'm sure that lots of people listening to this have similar experiences of living somewhere else or experiencing a difference in lifestyle or culture and the reactions that they have, the sort of different reactions. I wonder if we've got listeners to this who are in the UK or maybe in Australia or something, or certainly a sort of English-speaking country. I wonder if I've got any listeners, certainly living in the UK, who could kind of share similar experiences.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Or ask your questions, like, why do British people do this? It'd be really interesting for us to see like what is it that you still don't get or that really shocked you.
Send in your questions into the comments section if you are living in the UK, or if you've had experience of that, like, and you just think, why do people do X, Y, and Z? Why do they have two taps in the bathroom?
That is something that is really good in France. The taps. None of this boiling hot water coming out of one and absolutely ice cold water coming out of the other, and no carpets in the bathroom, because they know how to furnish a bathroom correctly without a carpet.
Do.
Growing up,
they
we do. Had a carpet in the bathroom. Like, what? Why? It's a bathroom.
I guess in the winter months in Scotland, when, you know, you need to go to the toilet in the middle of the night, you don't want to stand on a cold floor because, you know, feet are going to freeze. And then by the time you hit 40, you'll have bunions on your feet from the trouble caused. So that's why there's carpet everywhere, because it's just, if not, your feet will freeze.
But around the toilet, there were tiles, Luke. If I remember well, the toilet area was tiled and the rest of the bathroom was carpeted. It's not unpleasant when you get out of the bath, I must admit.
That is an issue in a bathroom, in a toilet. Yeah, certainly the area immediately around the toilet. You think that you don't want that to be carpeted. Not at all.
The world's most awful carpet.
I want the listeners I don't want any listeners to think, oh my God, all British people have got dirty carpets around their toilets. No, there are solutions to that problem. There's various solutions to having a carpet in the toilet. But anyway, we must stop because we could go on forever.
I will also send you a link. Actually, earlier in the year, I interviewed a friend and colleague who lives in the US, and she's Spanish, and she talked about some of the differences and the culture shocks. It's very interesting to listen to. So I will,
that would be interesting. Where can we listen to that?
It's on my YouTube, and I will send you the link.
Just tell us what your YouTube is.
It is, well, I guess if you just look for Leo Listening on YouTube, you will find it. And then the interview is called, it's basically like a Spanish expat in the US kind of thing. You'll find it on the channel.
Leo Listening on YouTube, L-E-O. And then listening.
And then the word listening, and you'll find it. Yeah.
And it was, sorry, a Spanish what?
I think I've called it a Spanish expat's experience of living in the US. Something pretty obvious, you know.
Yeah. Okay. You've got lots of videos here on your channel. Lots of little bits of advice about different things. You've got conversations with people, you've got speaking tips. Stuff like that.
All sorts.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Oh, you've spoken to various people. That's good. That's great.
I have. Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, nice to talk to you again. And
thank you.
Take care. Have fun filling in your forms when you leave the house.
I will. I'm going to do that now to go for a walk.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Lovely. Speak to you again soon, and take care.
All right. Thanks so much, Luke. You too. See you.
Bye-bye then.
Bye.
Bye. So that was Cara Leopold from leolistening.com. That's leo-listening.com. Thanks again to Cara. I'm very curious to read your comments and responses to this conversation in the light of the things I said in the introduction. I would like to say again, if you have any questions about behaviour, customs or culture in the UK which you don't understand or find frustrating, please write them in the comments section. I would be glad to try to answer your questions both in the comments section and potentially in a whole podcast episode. It could be interesting to do a podcast episode where I try and explain my country. So if you've got any complaints, questions, things you don't understand about life in the UK, let me know. I'll try and answer them. Actually, having said that, I have done episodes about culture shock in the UK before, because I think, to be honest, I've probably heard all the comments, complaints, grumbles, gripes, questions and criticisms before. And so I have dealt with a lot of that stuff in previous episodes. But nevertheless, I'm very curious to see if I have any listeners who've experienced British culture shock. Ask me your questions. I'll try my best to explain my country and my culture. This is my job, isn't it, to an extent? So please go ahead. By the way, the specific episodes I did in the past about culture shock in England are episodes 192 and 193. Check the episode archive for those two. They were called Culture Shock London. And they mainly focused on life in the capital city, actually. But a lot of the things I said apply to the whole country. And to give you an idea of the things I talked about in those episodes, just in case, you know, you've got questions that maybe I've already answered, here is a little list. And this is a list of some of the most common questions and complaints that I've heard from foreign visitors in my country. So here we go with the list. So starting with my personal favourite, and I kind of mean that sarcastically. Right, so why do you have two separate taps in the bathroom rather than one single mixer tap? This question has haunted me for years, actually. Why don't you have electrical sockets in the bathroom? I want to dry my hair with my hairdryer or use my hair straighteners, but there's no plug in the bathroom. How do British people manage this? How do you live like this? Why is your food so plain and unhealthy? Why is your weather quite miserable? Why do you drive on the left? It's like you do everything differently here. Your trains are often late, delayed, overcrowded, and too expensive. Why is this? Why are there so many foreigners in London? I haven't met a real English person yet. Why are the houses and flats in London so old and drafty, with windows that don't keep out the cold, and yet the rent is so expensive? Why don't people talk to each other on the underground? It's like everyone's ashamed or something. And it's really hard to make friends with people here. English people are so reserved, it's like they're impossible to make friends with. Why don't people carry umbrellas all the time, even when it's raining? The internet is too slow here. You just don't make any effort to speak other languages here, do you? It's just English and that's it. Also, people don't make any effort to help me when I'm trying my best to talk to them in their language. Why, oh why, do the pubs close at 11 p.m? I'm just getting ready to go out at 11 p.m. Also, why do you eat dinner so early here? Why do English people go to the pub after work and just drink and drink and drink, standing up without eating? It's not very civilized. Cigarettes are ridiculously expensive here. When English people do the washing up, when they wash the dishes in the kitchen, they use too much soap and then they don't rinse off the soap when they've finished. That's like leaving chemicals all over your plates. Why do you have carpet everywhere, even in the toilet sometimes? That seems unhygienic. Why don't you take off your shoes when you enter a house? That's like bringing the dirt from the street into your home. The British have a weird sense of humour. What is this? British humour? So if those are some of the complaints or questions in your head, then you might want to listen to episodes 192 and 193 to hear my full responses. But also feel free to write new questions or indeed any responses you have in the comments section. That's pretty much it for this episode. Just some reminders. So first of all, I'd just like to remind you that this week I uploaded a 28-minute video of me doing stand-up comedy in London at the Comedy Store. So if you want to see me doing stand-up on stage in front of a live audience, you can, but you need to be a premium subscriber to do it. So go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info to watch the video and hopefully enjoy it. At least maybe you will be able to kind of satisfy your curiosity if you've been wondering about my stand-up for some time. New premium content is coming soon as well. I keep saying this, but I just want to reassure you. If you want to unlock all the premium episodes and also help me pay the rent, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. Also, download the Luke's English Podcast app to get the entire episode archive on your phone, including loads of bonus content and access to Luke's English Podcast premium episodes. Just search for Luke's English Podcast app in the App Store. You can do that right away now, and it's completely free. If you're listening to this on YouTube, then don't forget to like and subscribe and leave a comment. It helps the algorithm to promote my episodes. Also, if I reach 100,000 subscribers, YouTube will send me a nice glass thing, which would be lovely, wouldn't it? Everyone wants to have nice glass things. I'm currently on about 76, maybe 77,000 subscribers now. So do subscribe to the channel. That would help. Follow me on Twitter at English Podcast and like the page on Facebook as well. Tell your friends about Luke's English Podcast. And also, be excellent to each other. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay positive, and keep working on your English. Thanks again to Cara Leopold. You can find her on YouTube as well, Leo Listening on YouTube. I will speak to you again on the podcast soon, but for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.